From Buck's studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Rob Ferret, sitting in for Tom Clark, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question, the number to call is 1-800-462-7413. And along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Right, we're going to talk about bad salads, salmonella risk. What is the risk actually when you have raw vegetables and fruits? We'll talk a bit about that, how to prevent it, who that information is important for. And dementia rates, they're not rising, they're falling in the U.S. New stuff from a very important journal, JAMA Internal Medicine, that comes on other things that show that dementia is dropping in the United States.
And our recipe today.
Mocktails. Something good for this time of year, libation without the alcohol.
And I think we've got three of them.
We do.
Not one or two, but three.
And they're delicious.
And to the phones we go now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us from Manhattan in New York. Hi.
Hi. I've always had a really not good posture, but as I get older, it gets worse. And I have that thing on my back of my neck. It's called, I think, Dowager's hump, but in New York City we call it buffalo back. Anyway, yeah, that's true. Now listen, this is serious.
Yeah,
so, it is. I'm not laughing at that. I'm laughing at the name buffalo back versus Dowager's. Because in New York they don't have Dowager's anymore. Maybe that's it.
So anyway, I'm sitting at the computer, and I know when I stand up, like, My neck is not right. So I go to several doctors in New York because I don't believe in going to one doctor. And I hang out up at Columbia Presbyterian, which is where I go to all the clinics. So anyway, one doctor says, don't get this little strap that the dancers wear, the ballerinas wear, straighten it out when you're sitting at the computer. Don't get it, because when you take it off, then the muscles drop. The other doctors at Columbia Presbyterian tell me, oh, no, get it. It's very good for you. Now, these doctors are so young and so short now in New York. When you go up there, all you see is, like, floating white jackets because they're so tiny. So I'm in the room, and they get a kick out of me. They know me for years. So the other doctors come in, and so they have a debate, and they say, don't get it, get this thing. And I say, well, thanks, folks, but now I'm going to have to ask Dr. Zorba. And they all turn around. And they say, who the hell is Dr. Zorba? Is he up here with us? So one doctor says, no, you mean the guy that owns the Zorba restaurant down in the subway? I said, no, the guy on the radio. So that's why I'm calling you, and they're all waiting to hear what your answer is.
All right. The guy on the radio, first of all, may or may not be taller than your doctors. I don't know. I'm not there.
Right.
Two, Zorba, an order of euros. And three, do you have an answer for? Where do you weigh in on this?
That's it. I love it. I just love it. Well, first of all, let's talk about Dowager's hump, which, by the way, is also called a buffalo hump. That is, those are two names for it. And these are generally, there are two explanations for it. One, the most common explanation, it's really osteoporosis. It's not the right posture. It's also the softening of the bones, the lack of calcium within the bones that often occurs as you get older and older. There's another thing that can also do buffalo hump, and that has to do with abnormal amounts of steroids that you're producing, so that you end up getting, if you're on large doses of prednisone, you actually can get what's called soft tissue in the back of the neck, and that's also called buffalo hump. And that's different from what most older women have. They usually have osteoporosis. So my first question is this. Do you have osteoporosis? Were you on a medication? I'm going to answer that before we get to whether or not you should use this strap.
The only medication I'm on, which is very good for me for 35 years, is lithium. And I'm on thyroid.
Okay,
very
and you're on thyroid. And thyroid replacement. Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
So what we have to do in order to improve our posture, one of the big issues is we lean in front of computers, we hunch up in front of the computers, and they lead to bad posture. That's exactly right. And so I'm on the side of, yes, anything to straighten up, to move your shoulders back, your head forward, and straighten up the spine is good. And so the straps that you're talking about, that ballerinas often use to get their spine straight from a muscular point of view is actually probably good because it opens things up. We're just too focused forward when we're in front of the computer. You can see Rob is thinking about getting
Getting really self-conscious about my posture now as I'm sitting here.
Well, that's because you're like, I mean, look at it. Look at you right now. If you can look at Rob, I mean, no, wait a second. You're now sitting up
look
straight.
Look at your radio closely.
You're now sitting up straight. Look at that. You just sat up straight.
Okay. No, I'm thinking
you
about it
now. You just changed your posture.
I did.
You know, you just changed your posture in front of you. So you tell them that Dr. Zorba said the strap is good if it's comfortable. Because you're in front of the computer throughout the day, right? Is that right?
Right.
You know, I've got a tip for you that's important. Remember, sitting is the new smoking. So if you're sitting in front of the computer for 20 or 30 minutes, you should actually get up and move around. Open up your chest, move around, walk a little bit, or even if you're sitting there, do some exercises. There are a lot of exercises you can do while you're on your chair, but getting up and moving that body, if you look at the blue zones, people who live a long life, they often get up and move throughout the day. So I'm pro-strap.
Okay.
In front of the computer. I'm pro-strap. So
great. Can I ask one other quick question?
Of course.
The doctors told me they don't go near this. And it comes on about 3 o'clock in the morning on those crazy infomercial commercials, whatever, you know.
Sure.
And it's $10, and it's two little round circular pins, and you put them, you just stick them over right where your armpits goes up high.
Uh-huh.
And every time you don't stand up straight, you get an electric shock.
I don't think that seems a little extreme.
Could that hurt you?
Well, it's an electric shock. It's not going to hurt you, but it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
And you know something? It's that's what infomercials are like at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I guess
they want to shock people into waking up. I find that a shocking thing to have. I think I would stay away from that. But use the strap.
And let us know.
And also,
I'm going to use the strap. And the doctors told me, look, listen to whoever this Zorba is, and for God's sake, just get a boyfriend. And you don't have to come here so much. Thank you very much. You're great.
Thanks. Good luck.
A lot.
Good luck to you. Maybe we can help her with that boyfriend issue on the next call.
Yes.
You can call
Tinder.
Back in.
Tinder for the senior set.
Tinder, you're thinking.
For the senior set.
Yeah.
Yes.
And now I am conscious about my posture now.
You've changed your posture.
At work here, I have a standing desk now, or one you can crank up and down after years and years of sitting. I'm hoping that helps.
Crank is like at a hydraulic lift. You can crank the desk or crank your butt.
You can crank the desk.
Not your butt.
You can't crank
your butt up and down.
I don't even want to think about that. Thanks so much for that call and good luck at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, before we go back to our callers, one of our topics this week on salad, not just any salad, salads that come in a bag or greens that come in a bag.
Yeah, bag salad. And bag salad, as you know, it's handy. It's become incredibly common. I mean, think about it 10 years ago, you might see one, or maybe 15 years ago, you would see the occasional bag salad. But bag salads take up lots of the lettuce space. They're convenient, they're easy to use, and the real issue is how much bacteria are on there, you know, and what do we do about it and who is it important? And this is a study that came out of England that showed that salmonella growth, specifically salmonella. Salmonella, remember, is present in chicken.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not talking about chicken and salad, but salmonella is one of those things that are present that can cause major problems in some people. Had a, quote, 2,400-fold increase, huge increase in bag salad. It's a small number with a massive increase because salmonella we associate with chicken, but the reality is salmonella can also be in bag lettuce. And it reminds me of the issue that occurred a number of years ago. It was bad spinach, if I remember correctly. It might have been a different green, that produced hemolytic uremic syndrome, and that was a very serious syndrome. A number of people died from it, once again, from food poisoning. There was, of course, many years ago, the Jack in the Box debacle with E. coli. A number of children died from E. coli, and this brings up the whole thing about food poisoning in America all over the place, and the fact is this is one of the issues that's there.
And what they did here, it looks like they mushed up some of the salad, and that 2,400-fold growth is from damaged leaves in the juice. And it looks like when there's that little bit of salad juice, you know, lettuce juice, that's what's, am I right, letting the salmonella grow in the bag?
Well, it grows where it can grow. It kind of grows where it can grow. But the issue is, okay, what's the risk and what do you do about it?
Right. Should we buy this stuff? What do we do with it?
So the reality is, for most of us, if we get salmonella, a little salmonella, we might get a little diarrhea. We might not get anything. But let's take young children. Let's take infants. Let's take people who are on chemotherapy, people who have HIV/AIDS, people who are on a drug called Humira, which is for rheumatoid arthritis, which can then reduce your ability to actually fight infection. For people such as that, they have to take extra special precautions. I think that's really where this comes into play. So my recommendation is, for most of us, I eat bag salad. I don't wash my bag salad. I eat it. I do wash fruit when I'm putting it on, when I'm going to have it. It's very important to do. But if you have any one of those things where you're at an increased risk, that's where you put it in your salad spinner, you wash the lettuce leaves, and you're going to just have that increased level where you're going to get rid of, as you said, the juice that's in there. But for most of us, I think the risk is still minimal because we have an increased ability to actually fight the infection that's there.
And the researchers are saying, and especially, I guess, if you're in those conditions you mentioned, Zorba, watch out for the damaged leaves. Don't, if you're seeing juice in the salad, it's going, I mean, it's rotting then, I guess, at that point. So maybe don't eat the rotting salad.
When you open up your bag salad,
right,
do you look at the juice in the bottom of the bag?
You know, if there's liquid at the bottom of the bag, it's in the compost,
well,
as far as I'm
exactly
concerned.
Yeah. That's it. So in other words, that's kind of what it is. You look at the bag automatically, and I think that's kind of an important part of it. But if you're a little kid, or if you're a senior citizen, if you have bad eyesight, if you can't smell, which senior citizens have a big issue with, that's where you actually have to think about it and take one more step. And that's where an extra safety precaution fits in.
Back to our callers now. If you have a question for Zorba, call in at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. We'll go now to Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hello. I am fighting a problem with valve replacement surgery.
With what kind of surgery?
Valve replacement surgery.
Valve replacement, okay.
And my cardiologist has advised me that I can no longer eat any foods that contain vitamin K. So that eliminates vegetables altogether.
Oh, wow.
So my world kind of like was shattered. I said, what do I do? And then it dawned on me, it didn't say I couldn't eat fruit.
Oh, okay.
So lots of apples and bananas. Some fruit I cannot really get with. That's bananas. Loaded with vitamin K.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you a little bit about that. So, see, when you get a valve replacement for some valves, are you on the drug Coumadin? Is that what you're on, warfarin or Coumadin?
Well, warfarin is what I'm on, yes.
Right. So here's the issue. So, first of all, I disagree with that. I do not agree with your cardiologist that you can't eat vegetables. I think your cardiologist is wrong. I'm going to come by right on there. I think vegetables are important. The issue is that it can alter the Coumadin, which is the drug that we use, is a vitamin, goes against vitamin K, and it can alter something called your INR or Protime, and that can interfere with it. And so for some people, where that drug is very difficult to regulate, we say, hey, cut down on the vegetables because it's difficult to regulate. But I've got a couple of answers to that. There are new drugs on the market which can take care of all the issues with your valve that do not use warfarin, and you don't have to pay any attention to the vegetables at all. They're more expensive. There's a drug called Xarelto. That's one of the drugs. The other one is called Eliquis.
But on the Eliquis, what it says is if I have a valve, it's not good for me.
Well, if you have the valve, it hasn't been tested. That's what it is. Have you had difficulty regulating this, you know, your INR, your clotting test? Have you had difficulty in the past, or are you easy to regulate?
I haven't had a difficulty in regulating. What I've had a difficulty is not being sure when my blood is thin or too thin or when it's too thick. And I can't detect that.
Oh, no, you can't.
I go to the lab or get a blood drawn.
That's right.
And I have to wait for the cardiologist to call me and tell me.
That's right.
Either I'm right on the numbers or I am either too low or too thin. And so I've got to start regulating the amount of warfarin that
that's
I'm
right.
going to take.
That's right. I've got one suggestion for you. If you keep your vegetable intake pretty similar every single day, they can regulate your Coumadin based on that vegetable intake. You can't be over, but you can have some every single day. And that's how we do that in our office. In other words, if people are on Coumadin, we say keep your vegetable intake and let's measure your test and make sure the test works out. But we say don't overdo it like people do on Thanksgiving and Christmas and other times.
So he would introduce these vegetables in conjunction with his doctor. He'd work that out with him and let them know to try to regulate that medication, not just go lone wolf on this.
That's right.
Okay. So you're saying the cardiologist is not correct here?
Well, I'm saying the cardiologist, there's some options here that you can work with your cardiologist. And we, for instance, at our particular clinic, we have something called a coagulation clinic where we have nurses, and all they do all the time is talk about this and regulate it, and people should eat vegetables. And so they regulate it in our group based on keeping that vegetable intake constant on a regular basis, and they can get 95% of the people regulated. Now, you might be the 5% that can't. That's different. But 95% can be regulated in conjunction with the clinic and with blood tests.
Okay. Thanks for giving me the insight, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling, and thanks for listening.
Thanks so much for that call at 1-800-462-7413. Before we take a break, Zorba, let's check in with your favorite do-gooders, the Grammar Police. Actually, Zorba, you didn't think the Grammar Police were just free to hand out their infractions, their fines, without any executive oversight, did you?
No.
This message came to us all the way from the top. Behold, the Grammar Police. Who polices the Grammar Police? These people, they're the Internal Affairs Division of the Grammar Police. Jennifer here, she listens on KAMU in College Station, Texas. Jennifer writes, Dr. Pastor, regarding a recent Grammar Police segment about data is... versus data
R. I'm with you.
If you saw a herd of buffalo crossing the road in front of you, you would say the herd is moving across, even though herd is plural. You're not wrong that data may be treated in the rest of the sentence as singular. Data is, among other things, a synonym for information. To say the information are analyzed is just weird. It's a grammar myth, what she said. Thanks for being you. I love your show.
Oh, it's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. The police, as you said, the administration of the Grammar Police is finally overriding the pawns in the Grammar Police pawn shop. That's it. So we have the king or queen of the Grammar Police doing this. I think it's wonderful.
I have two responses. One, I don't know if I buy it. The herd is different. A single herd. You wouldn't have a single data.
Well, you would say the herd are crossing unless they were herds.
But one herd is crossing.
One herd
is crossing. The herd are, yeah, I don't know.
The herd are crossing.
But.
You know something? That's two. That stumbles.
Well,
that's stumbling.
Here's part two.
Yeah.
I don't know if I care. If you say the data is conclusive,
yeah,
I'm fine with it. If you say the data are conclusive,
now wait a second.
I'm good with that too.
If you say the data are conclusive, then you might be, maybe you're just trying to get to that higher realm and show that you're educated because you're using the word are. Do you think that's like a little bit kind of like snooty?
Well, pirates say are. Right,
oh,
they're not snooty.
The pirates say, I got it.
Did something Zorba say not compute? Just post to our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or, of course, on Facebook.
Our recipe is coming up along with more of your calls and another interesting topic to discuss right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Here, sitting in for Tom Clark with Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our number again is 1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for the good doctor. Okay, Zorba, it is recipe time again. A few years ago, around this time of year, we featured some non-alcoholic versions of cocktails that would be fun to make for friends and family at a gathering or something like that. It was a really big hit. People loved these. So we're going to do it again. So here we go. We're going to mix up some mocktails.
Mocktails.
All right. We've got not one, Zorba, not two. Yeah, the mocktails theme. Good stuff there. Good stuff. In fact, we can't top that. We'll put the recipes online or something.
Seasonal cheer.
Seasonal cheer, exactly. And okay, so here's some seasonal cheer. Mocktails. You like these, Zorba. You're a big fan of these non-alcoholic cocktails.
The issue is, I'm not a teetotaler, but there are people, 10% of the population are alcoholics, and another 10% either don't want to drink or can't drink, mm-hmm. or they are problem drinkers. And so, you know, how do you have libation without the alcohol? And part of the issue is exactly that. In the summer, we have a pool party. We love it. We have margaritas, but we also have, for instance, virgin margaritas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can have a whole bunch of different things. You can enjoy a wonderful season and have something that's celebratory that doesn't have the alcohol. And that's where mocktails, I think, really come in.
And these are fun. I will say up front, serve them in a fun glass, right?
Yes,
not just in that plastic cup.
That's
right.
With a smile. You have to serve these with a smile. These are not a down and out drink. These are like a smile.
These are happy.
Happy face.
I could smile for
happy
these.
Happy face. Happy
All right.
Face.
We've
so
got
we're
three.
Do
Where do you want to start?
Three of them. I'm going to start with the one that is the most complex. None of them are that complex, but let's start out. This makes one pitcher of drinks.
Ginger grapefruit spritzer starts
us
off.
So start out with a 3-inch piece of ginger. Peel it and thinly slice it. It's going to be about a third of a cup of ginger.
Third of a cup of fresh ginger, thinly sliced.
That's right. Fresh ginger. Very important. It's got to be fresh.
Yeah.
Quarter cup of sugar.
Quarter cup of sugar.
Quarter cup of honey.
Quarter cup of honey. This is going to be kind of sweet.
Okay. 4 cups of ruby red grapefruit juice. You can buy it. You could squeeze 5 grapefruits, but frankly, that's a lot of work.
Why we need all the sugar
to balance out this. So that's four cups
of fresh squeezed ruby
it's
red.
It's going to be that nice sour taste.
Grapefruit juice.
Ice cubes. You're going to ice cubes and a 12-ounce of club soda.
A 12-ounce can of club soda and lots of ice.
That's right. So in a small saucepan, combine the ginger, sugar, honey, quarter cup of water, a little quarter cup of water in there, over medium heat. Stir until the sugars dissolve. That's going to be about 2 minutes. Turn it up to about a medium heat, like I said, not too hot. Place the grapefruit juice in a pitcher. Strain the ginger syrup through a fine mesh sieve or something that's going to get rid of all that gritty
stuff. The ginger chunks, okay.
Mm-hmm. In there. Serve it, divide the juice mixture among 6 glasses, fill it with ice, top it off with a splash of club soda.
Oh, so you're basically making a ginger simple syrup there with the honey, mm-hmm. the sugar, and the ginger,
right.
mixing it with grapefruit juice.
That's right.
That sounds great.
Delicious.
That is simple.
That's it. Okay. Apple cider martini.
This is number 2, apple cider martini.
Okay. 1/2 cup of apple cider.
That makes sense. 1/2 cup of apple cider.
1/4 cup of orange juice.
1/4 cup of orange juice.
You can use a splash of pomegranate juice.
A splash of pomegranate
and
juice.
And a cinnamon stick.
Just one cinnamon stick.
That's right. Combine the ingredients, pour into a wine glass. Once again, a nice little wine glass. Add the cinnamon stick for garnish, and you're there.
Boom. That one's super easy.
Apple
you can do that
cider
in no
martini.
Time at all.
Apple. Now, the next one is Kiwi's Big Adventure.
Carl, I think, had something to do with the name of that one. I'm going to go out on a limb.
Kiwi's Big Adventure. I love it. Two ripe kiwis, peeled and coarsely chopped. Now, you have a kiwi story, I believe.
Yeah, one time, I didn't really know what kiwis were. I was, 20s or something. I was like, oh, these look good. And I was like, kiwi juice is supposed to be good. I put them in the blender, drank it up. It was really gritty. I didn't know you're supposed to peel them first. I thought you just ate it like an apple, the whole thing.
No,
so
you don't do that.
So you want to peel and chop these two kiwis.
1 medium lime juice.
Juice of 1 lime.
4 tablespoonfuls of agave nectar.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that at the stores. I never have bought it. 4 tablespoons of agave nectar.
Ice. And you're going to have some club soda.
Some cold soda water.
That's right. So place the kiwis and lime juice in a blender. Once again, you've got to peel the kiwis. Process it until it's nice and smooth. Divide the kiwi mixture between 2 tall glasses. You're going to use about 1/3 cup of puree per drink. Mix in 2 tablespoonfuls of the agave nectar into each. Put on a long spoon and then top it off with the seltzer.
Well, I think that's my favorite one. That's the one I really want to try, the kiwi one.
Is that because of the name, Kiwi's Big Adventure?
I just like the kiwi and lime and agave nectar. That sounds fantastic.
And you can finally overcome the issues that you had years ago when you were in your 20s. You know, you can finally know to peel.
Trying to spit that kiwi peel out.
That's right. You don't want to have to spit out. So these are wonderful. Ginger grapefruit spritzer, apple cider martini, Kiwi's Big Adventure. And you know where you can get these.
I'm wondering. People will want to know where they can find these recipes, Zorba.
It's an amazing thing called the web.
The web.
You can actually get to it on your phone if you want to. And that's zorbapastor.org. And, of course, you can always find us through Facebook.
Looking forward to trying these. Back to the phones we go now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Joining us now, a listener in Cumberland, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Rob. How you doing?
Good. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing really good.
What can we help you out with?
Well, I'm a guitarist, and I've been playing guitar and touring with major acts since I was about 18 years old out in Los Angeles, and I just recently moved here. But I noticed about a year and a half ago, I was playing in Norway at a festival, and my legs, I was standing on a hard stage, and I know that my legs felt, the skin felt like numb on the upper part of my legs, and not inside, not internally, but just on the outside of the skin, and it's kind of happened to me quite a few times when standing on stage with a guitar. It's funny, it's not my whole leg there, the inside internally that feels numb, it's just the outside, like on the skin.
By the way, have you had any blood tests over the last couple of years looking for diabetes, just as a question?
Mm-hmm. It's funny because when I moved to Cumberland, I was really fighting allergies real bad, and they took a blood test, and they said it was a borderline diabetic.
Okay, so that's one thing, by the way, that we always think about, and the reason is you can get a neuropathy. What you've got is a neuropathy, and it just means abnormal nerves that are firing. You know, it's a very general term. There are lots of different neuropathies that occur. There's a whole list. If you Google it, you'll see a whole bunch of neuropathies. But other issues also have to do with things on your skin, such as soaps and insoles and shoe things. How are your feet? Are they painful? Are they uncomfortable? Have you changed your shoes at all?
Yeah, I try to use walkboard shoes because they're really good on stage. But I have used cowboy boots, you know, for most of my life. You know, and
what kind of socks do you wear with them?
Just standard cotton socks, not very thick.
Sure. Okay. I have a couple of ideas for you. First of all, it's some kind of neuropathy. And first of all, if you're pre-diabetic, the most important thing is for you to exercise more, lose weight, and try to get that blood sugar under control. So we don't go into that, but that's what we do. When you're pre-diabetic, it just means the numbers are not in the normal range. They're a little bit out of the normal range, and a certain number of those people every year become diabetics. And the diabetes rate in the country has almost doubled since 1990. Huge, huge difference. So that's one aspect. Another aspect is how do we treat the neuropathy that's actually there? And sometimes we can actually change our brain sensation by changing the sensation on our skin. And you could do that by wearing a support stocking. So one of the things I would recommend is getting a support stocking. It can be, there's something called a TEDS, T-E-D-S, that go up to your knee when you're on stage, or another type of support stocking. They can be thin. They don't have to be thick. They come in different things. Or there's a stocking you can get. We'll put it on the website, zorbapastor.org. They're called FIT. FIT. That's the name of the company. I used it when I went to Nepal for a month. So they're wonderful socks. They're kind of like support socks. And what they do is they put pressure on the nerves and the veins and the lymphatic system in the bottom part of your foot. And that may change the sensation that you're having. In other words, what we're doing is we're doing a counter sensation that actually gets rid of that sensation. And this is very similar to noise-canceling earphones that are made by Bose that you wear on the airline. Because when you wear noise-canceling earphones, it's actually putting a sound into those earphones that actually cut out the sound that actually coming into your ear. That's how noise-canceling earphones are. And this is similar to things like Bengay that people put on their back, which is a counter-irritant, and it has a smell to it. It has an irritation of the skin, once again, to get rid of the sensation that's there. You're going to do it with skin, because if you did it with Bengay, the other people in the band would say, get out of here.
That's
what you're going to do. So the FIT stockings, we'll put that name. TED stockings, TEDS we'll put in. That's what I would recommend because you've got good shoes and you wear cowboy boots, and that's what I would do with it. And once again, diet and exercise because this may be related to your diabetes.
I got to ask, you said you've toured with some major acts. Are you willing to name names for us here?
Yeah, I can. Linda Ronstadt.
Oh, wow.
Chris Christopherson.
Oh, okay.
And Ricky Nelson.
Wow, that's wonderful. Hey,
those are some big names.
You know, I've got another question. What motivated you to come to Cumberland, Wisconsin?
From L.A. That's a change of lifestyle.
As we speak, I'm in the middle of boxes. I'm getting ready to move back to Texas. But I moved up here for a year and a half to work on my book and a brand-new radio show that we're doing based on the book, and it's called Best Seat in the House, and where I'm interviewing of many of the people that I've worked with. And we just did the pilot episode last month with Dolly Parton in Nashville.
So, oh, that is cool.
Wow.
Yeah. And I love being up here. Wisconsin's been fabulous, and I certainly love it here now, and I'll be missing it.
Yeah, it's a great state. Great state. A little chilly in the winter, but...
That's an understatement.
Great people.
Sure.
That's an understatement, right?
Well, good luck. I hope that advice helps you up on stage there. Look forward to hearing some of those stories you're going to tell.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
If you have a question for Zorba, you can join in at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. We'll go back to our callers now with a visit to El Paso, Texas. Hello.
Hi, Dr. Zorba. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question regarding my father. He just had a brain stroke, and his right side is paralyzed. I was wondering if he can recover. He does not know us who we are in his surrounding, but just recently, like last night, he was kind of recognizing us, and he was making some noise. I'm just worried about him.
Well, before Zorba gets in, first of all, I'm very sorry. This is a tough situation for you and your family. Good luck to you. How recently did your father have that stroke?
How far back?
Yeah.
About 4 weeks ago.
Now, a couple of questions. Did he have high blood pressure? Was he a smoker? Did he have diabetes, heart disease? Any risk factors that produced this stroke?
He's not smoking, but he had diabetes.
He had diabetes. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about stroke. So when we look at stroke, it's, of course, common. Heart disease is the number one killer in America. Cancer is usually number two. Stroke is number three. And the issue with the stroke is it's either a bleed or a clot, more commonly a clot in the brain. Part of the, basically, the artery in the brain is clogged. The blood doesn't get to that part of the brain, and that part of the brain dies. Now, part of the brain dies. Another part of the brain actually is just kind of in shock. So it may not be dead, but it's not working properly. And study after study have shown that when people have strokes, even deep strokes, that given time and therapy, there can be a recovery. And sometimes we can predict the recovery, and frankly, sometimes we can't predict the recovery. But one thing has been shown to be very important in the recovery. It's occupational therapy and physical therapy, and then support from the family system. So I take it sounds to me like you're very close to your father. How often do you go and see him?
Oh, actually, he is far away right now.
Who is with him right now?
My oldest brother and my little sister.
Okay. Oldest brother and little sister. Where is your dad? Where is he at?
He is in Iran, actually.
Okay. So is he getting any physical therapy and occupational therapy? Do you know that? And if not, I've got some suggestions for you.
Sure. His doctor suggested that he need to take 10 times go to physical therapy, but I don't think so he started because last night he was back to the hospital.
He was back to the hospital. So he had some kind of a complication if he went back to the hospital. So it's very important that physical therapy be started sooner versus later. And physical therapy is where you get the person, you move them, you motivate them to move their body, to begin to take action, to begin to look around, to begin to use that part of the body that they're not using. And the earlier you do it, the better off you are. That's what we've discovered in studies around here. So one thing I would recommend you do is you talk to your relatives and you say, how can we get some physical therapy for my dad? Now, let's make an assumption that that's not that easy to get, you know, that there's some problems. If you go to YouTube and you look at physical therapy post-stroke, and we'll give you a couple of, we'll put it on my website, zorbapastor.org. It can show you some things that you can do with your father when you go and visit him to begin his physical therapy, or your relatives, your brother and sister, can also do with him. Because physical therapy can also be done by people who aren't physical therapists. It's getting the brain to start to use the body.
I see. Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. And recovery, believe it or not, I have seen people who recover after a month or two, nothing seems to be happening, and then after 2 or 3 months, things improve. And I want to give you a little story about something that happened that had to do with a nerve, not with physical therapy. Young patient in my practice was there. He was in his 20s. He had a drug and alcohol problem, fell asleep with his arm out, and the nerve in his arm was totally shot, so he couldn't move his right arm. He had nothing, no sensation. He had sensation, but he wasn't able to move it for 6 months. At 6 months, all of a sudden, a little bit afterwards, he had a little tingle in his little pinky finger so he could move it. At 3 months later, he was able to move his hand. And 9 months, 10 months after that, he was able to move his entire arm. So the nerves in his arm were in shock. They stopped working, and then they started again. The same thing happens with a stroke. Don't give up the ship. Work with your dad. Have your relatives work with your dad. The more you work with him, the better off he's going to be and the more he'll recover. And that's the best tip I can give you.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot.
Have a good day. Thank you. You too.
Thanks so much for calling. Before we take our break, Zorba, let's take another listener question. This comes to us from an anonymous listener, and for reasons that are going to make sense in a moment, we're going to call him Paul. Paul. Right.
Okay.
Paul writes, I have a bunion. See where the Paul came from?
Got okay. it.
I have a bunion that I'd like looked at. If my primary doc suggests seeing a specialist, my choice seems to be for this bunion, orthopedic surgeon versus podiatrist. Uh-huh. Can you, Zorba, offer some advice on one versus the other, or is there some other choice I didn't mention?
Well, first of all, they both do it. So in our group, we have a group practice, a large group practice. We have podiatrists that do bunions, and we have orthopedic surgeons that do bunions. So the answer is they're both equally trained
Flip
to do
coin.
It. Now, podiatrists do lots and lots of these. If you go to an orthopedic surgeon, you want to go to one that does lots of them. So the answer to this is you ask them, how many have you done last year? Mm-hmm. That's what you do. If they say, well, I've done like 5 last year, and somebody else has said, I've done 40 last year, you go with the person who does more. That's always my thought. You want somebody who doesn't just do bunions occasionally. You want somebody who does bunions all the time. Step 2, if you have a question, you can say, can I talk to one of the patients who had the bunion done? That's mm-hmm. another way to do it. And how many bunions does the hospital do? Are they commonly doing lots and lots of bunions? Because the post-recovery is as important as the surgery in terms of making things as good as they can get. So those are 3 tips on how to choose your Paul Bunyan surgery.
All right, Paul, good luck with that. Bunyan, do you have a question you'd like to ox Zorba? I'm going too far. Paul had Babe the Blue Ox.
At zorbapastor.org or post it through Facebook.
You can tweet us too, apparently.
Of course. You can tweet.
You can do that.
Tweet.
More calls to come and another interesting topic and our medical myth buster segment all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Rob Ferret here, sitting in for Tom Clark with Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Zorba, before we take another caller, we've got another topic, this one on dementia. Maybe some good news?
Oh, this is very good news. So, first of all, a bit of history before this. Last year, there was an article that came out from a New England Journal of Medicine that had to do with the Framingham Heart Study, which showed, long-term study, that there was a drop of dementia related, by the way, to education. People with high school dropouts did not see a reduction of dementia, but there was a significant reduction in dementia. This study confirms something that is extremely similar. So this is a study recently published in JAMA Internal Medicine, people 65 years of age, or 21,000 people who have been followed for a number of years. So it's a prospective study where they're actually engaged in activities that may be looking at dementia. And it's a long-term study that they're looking at. And lo and behold, there's been a significant drop. If you look at the drop in relationship to 1990 in the year 2012, okay? So if we look at the prevalence of dementia from 1990 to 2012, we find that people 65 years of age and older, there's been a drop of about 24%, up to 24% over that time. Very significant drop in dementia. This, by the way, keeps in contact with the same thing that is going in the Framingham Heart Study. Now, I mention this because we have thought there's going to be a tsunami of dementia. Why? Because there's an increase in diabetes. We're getting older. We're living longer. But in the end, turns out there's not a tsunami in dementia. There's a drop in dementia. And why is this occurring? Now, what's interesting in this study is it showed that obesity was not a major risk factor of dementia, but might actually be decreasing the risk of dementia, which seems like it's counterintuitive, but it's not. And I'll tell you why.
Okay, tell me.
It may be that the drop we're seeing in dementia because we're seeing that drop because, number one, we're treating hypertension. People who are heavier, more likely to have hypertension. We're treating diabetes. We're treating cholesterol in patients who have diabetes. And it may be that statin drugs and hypertensive drugs are mainly responsible for a reduction in dementia. It still doesn't explain the educational component that is in there, but these are possibly what's happening in the drop. It's very, very interesting data.
So we've got this data, this good news. What we want to do is figure out what can we do for people in the future? Do we have any takeaways with prevention?
Oh, now? I think we absolutely have takeaways. First of all, education plays a role. We found that in Framingham. We found it in this study. People who are older today are more likely to be educated than people were years ago. Education may be an issue because it keeps your brain active. The brain is a muscle. Next step, if you have hypertension, if you have diabetes, if you have high cholesterol, take your pills and take an aspirin tablet every day, because that may be part of it too. This is good news. A drop in dementia is what we're seeing today, and we'll see tomorrow.
Back to our callers, Zorba with a caller from Okanagan, Washington. Hi.
Oh, hey, how's it going?
Oh, okay. What can we help you out with today?
I'm curious. I have arthritis in my thumb, both my thumbs actually, but my left thumb particularly, down at the heel of the thumb and in the joint. It's kind of progressive. And I was wondering about DMSO, which was, you know, a big deal back in the 60s, and nobody seems to have heard of it now. And I hear good and bad things about it. It's supposed to be kind of instant relief. Are there any dangers? That's one question. The other treatment I've heard about is turmeric.
Uh-huh. Some interesting things. It's interesting how certain things come and go. And DMSO was big. It was big. See, Rob is sitting
I've never
here.
Heard of DMSO.
You've never heard of DMSO?
It was used a disco
on,
group, right?
No, right. It was used on racehorses. Do you remember that? Racehorses were big. DMSO, and they thought, we'll use it in people. And I had farmers who came in, and they couldn't get DMSO, so they started using WD-40. And I could tell because their overalls would be stained from the WD-40. They'd use it on their knees.
Topically, I'm hoping. Say, please tell me topically.
Topically.
Okay.
DMSO is topical.
Okay.
DMSO
okay.
is topical. You don't take it orally. But DMSO, there were a number of double-blind studies that looked at DMSO. Because, there were thoughts. I don't remember precisely what the side effects. There were more issues with poisoning and other issues, and they kind of are just in the back of my mind. I don't quite remember exactly what they were. But the double-blind studies didn't show it had any effect, that the DMSO probably had the same effect of WD-40, which wasn't much at all. And that's really why it fell to the wayside. Now, for animals, it was the issue with animals, and it might be they absorbed it differently. Like I said, racehorses were really the issues. But it died as an arthritis issue probably around the mid-80s. And I'll tell you why, one of the reasons it died. It died because ibuprofen first came in existence. The Upjohn company, Upjohn then merged into an another company that I think ultimately became Novartis. Upjohn invented ibuprofen, and ibuprofen basically took over from DMSO because ibuprofen was the first anti-inflammatory that really worked, and it was much more effective than DMSO, so that kind of fell to the wayside. So I don't think I would use it, but I will tell you something I would recommend. I would recommend topical diclofenac. So diclofenac, D-I-C-L-O-F-E-N-A-C, diclofenac, which was under the name brand Voltaren, V-O-L-T-A-R-E-N. But diclofenac topically actually has been shown, it's a topical anti-inflammatory, to work. Now, it comes under a name brand in the U.S., which is expensive, may or may not be covered by your insurance. It definitely works for hand arthritis. There's no doubt about it. But also, there are a number of pharmacies that will make it up topically for you. And it's, in my mind, it's just as good as the name brand. It costs about a tenth of the price. So I would recommend topical diclofenac, and that may work for thumb arthritis. And full disclosure, I did a lot of clinical research a number of years ago, and we were engaged in the topical diclofenac study, and the drug worked. The double-blind placebo-controlled trials showed it worked for hand arthritis.
That's a prescription medication,
it's
right?
It's a prescription medication, okay. Right. But you can get that from your doctor. You can also get it from Canadian pharmacies. Remember, if you order it from Canadian pharmacies, you are doing something against the law, and the government could come to your house, take it away, and fine you. But I have never heard of the government actually doing that.
Now, you mentioned turmeric, the spice.
Yeah.
You've seen something about that? I don't know.
Yeah, I've not seen much with turmeric. There are a number of people who swear by it, but there's no study that
nothing wrong with eating more curry.
It's an ancient thing. Nothing more with eating. You have to take that. But seriously, go either talk to your doctor and either get the name brand, which I believe is Voltaren, but it is diclofenac gel. But if it's not covered by your insurance or the copay is too much, find a compounding pharmacy in your area, because we have one in our area. They'll make it up. It's a tenth of the cost, and it works.
Okay, very good. And I guess one other question was cortisone shots. Is that a bad
way? Well, they do work, but you've got to be limited in how you do it, because you're entering the joint with a steroid. It can work once or twice, but after that you can actually cause joint destruction. So we use it on an occasional basis, but we do not use it on a regular basis. I would go with the topical diclofenac, because it works and it's safe.
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate it.
You're most welcome. Thanks a lot.
And if he gets that, he probably still shouldn't share it with the racehorses, right?
Right. You're not gonna put it on the racehorse joint. Not at all.
Thanks for that call at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Time again, Zorba, for our medical MythBuster segment. Today's question is from a listener named Gene in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, who writes, Dr. Zorba, what are your thoughts about magnetic mattresses? Quackery? Myth? So this is new to me. I didn't know we had magnetic mattresses.
Oh,
this is like a Murphy bed.
No,
move it out of the way, you just pin it up against your metal wall, and you've got all that space open.
Right.
So that sounds pretty handy.
They're very expensive. They're very expensive. And if we look back at magnetic mattresses and other magnets, they were very, very popular in about the 1880s, 1890s. If you look back in old medical texts, they would say, put magnets under here. People were wearing magnetic bracelets. They put on magnetic girdles in order to get rid of endometriosis, to get rid of pain from endometriosis. They were using magnets for cancer, for breast cancer. They had magnetic bras that you can imagine were very heavy to get rid of breast tenderness and breast cancer. There are no studies that show that magnetic mattresses will do anything for you. Not at all. Now, let's talk about alternative medicine. Even though there's not a study that shows you're going to do it, the real question is, well, you want to try it. So my other question is, no harm, no foul, right? No harm, no foul, that kind of a thing. But if you're spending a lot of money,
right,
That's kind of harmful. So I think magnetic mattresses are a myth.
All right. And if you really want to try the magnets, just get some from the local grocery store or realtor or whatever. Maybe just slide them
under the sheet. That's right.
The sheet. And that's way cheaper. You can get this for free in a lot of places. Do you have a possible myth for us? Zorba is always happy to lay it down. and he'll answer it with his magnetic personality. Post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Before we head out for the day, Zorba, let's break out your robe and your gavel for another episode of Judge Zorba. Today's case comes to us from Bob, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Z, a question about pneumonia shots. My doc said one shot is needed, but my wife's doc says more than one is needed. Whose doctor is correct?"
I am ready to come down with this, and the answer
the gavel is up.
The wife's doc.
The wife's doc.
There are
more
two
than
shots.
One shot.
Well, there are two shots, but let me explain. You get the shot once. There are two different shots. There are two kinds of shots. You get the shot one time. Mm-hmm. So Pneumovax was the first pneumonia shot. It's been on the market for a long time, maybe 20 years, at least 20 years. But there's another pneumonia shot that gets other types of pneumonia that has come out. And you get that shot one time also. So you get two shots one time. They have to be at least 1 year apart. They can be longer than 1 year apart. But there are two different pneumonia shots. They work on different types of pneumonia. They do not work on all pneumonias, but they work on a lot of pneumonias. I highly recommend that you get both pneumonia shots. If you are over the age of 65, if you've had a splenectomy, if you have other risk factors for pneumonia, such as asthma, both shots are better than one shot. So the wife is correct.
All right.
She gets points. He loses.
You've laid down the law. Now, I often will have, if I'm at a coffee shop, I don't go all the time, a double shot of espresso. That's going to protect my health from all this stuff,
of
right?
Of course. We always know that caffeine is a very important vitamin to keep you healthy. It is vitamin caffeine.
Hey, now, it turns out we're not done. Bob sent us a double shot of questions. He had two questions.
All right. Just all right. We've got to get my gavel out.
Yeah,
I've got my gavel.
Okay, back
I'm
out.
Already. I'm already.
Bob went on, "My wife's doc asked her a bunch of questions stating that Medicare requires that these are asked. What day is it? What state are you in? What month is it? What year is it? Etc. She's in 72 and in good health. Is there really such a requirement that you ask these questions of somebody?"
You mean they ask when they actually come into the office?
Right. It sounds like, what day is it? What state are you in?
This I know exactly what it is. Yeah. Now, wait, I'm ready to go.
Boom.
That's not a myth. The myth is part of the dementia screening for Medicare wellness physicals.
Okay.
And part of the dementia screening that we do is asking people what's the date, few things to see if they're oriented. We have them draw a clock, not a digital clock. We have them draw a clock because that actually has to do with abstract ability. We ask them questions. We say there are three questions. Can you remember these three questions? We have them come back. And it's part of a screening test, once again, for dementia and memory dysfunction that we do for Medicare. So the answer is, it is not a myth. It's not a requirement, but it's a requirement of the Medicare physical.
I'm a little worried about that clock thing because the kids, but before long, they've got all the digital clocks. They're going to draw what?
That's right. They're going to say, what is that?
And
you know what? You know what? That's exactly when they get to Medicare.
Draw a phonograph.
Phonograph?
Draw a vinyl record. Cassette tape. Do you have a debate you need settled? Add your case.
Eight-track.
An eight-track. John, I think I could still do that. Add your case to Judge Zorba's docket by sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web.
At ZorbaPastor.org. Or don't forget Facebook.
And you can always call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor On Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Rob Ferret, sitting in for Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor On Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1210Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.